told you that real-life superpowers aren't fiction, they're forged? What if buried beneath routine, doubt, and distraction, there exists a dominant force inside every person, waiting for ignition? We grow up watching icons like Superman, the team from the Fantastic Four, and Captain America. We imagine gamma blasts, alien suns, super soldier serum. We fantasize about the moment of transformation, the surge of light, the awakening of power, the becoming a new being. But what if the transformation isn't fantasy? What if it's transmutation, a refining by fire? Because inside you is untapped potential, not imaginary, not mystical, dormant. And when it awakens, something changes. You begin to sense what others miss. A form of precognition, the ability to read motion before it happens, to anticipate the volatile, to see the erratic become predictable in a split second before it unfolds. Your awareness extends beyond your skin, an extrasensory perception. The machine beneath you becomes an extension of your nervous system. Metal speaks, rubber whispers, the road communicates. You don't just ride the machine, you merge with it. And then there's the healing. A regenerative force, not instant like the comics, but real. The mind sharpens, the noise fades, the body adapts. Stress burns away in the crucible of focus. You emerge clearer, stronger, more focused, more integrated than before. This heroic transmutation doesn't happen in a laboratory. It doesn't come from another planet. It's earned through discipline, repetition, and controlled exposure to challenge. If you've gone through the process, you know. The transformation is not cosmic. It's neurological. It's psychological. It's physical. Treatment becomes ritual. Ritual becomes transformation. Transformation becomes power. And those powers, sharpened awareness, extended perception,
regenerative resilience,
are not fantasy. They are the therapeutic side effects.
Today we're going to talk about a topic that's important to motorcycle riding for a lot of different reasons. Since I started riding, people have been constantly asking me, why do you do this? Why do you ride? And I really didn't have a good answer. It was always, if you did it, you would understand. Today I'm going to explain everything about how to understand and what it means to be a rider and why I do it. Most importantly, will be your interactions with me. I want to hear your stories. Tell me how this video affects you. And answer that question. Why do you ride? Why do you do it? From the outside looking in, there's just tons of risk. It looks like all risk. So what's the reason? Why would you do this? Your responses are going to be the most important to me. Help me to tell this story. I think that if we can tell this story to each other, we can have a good answer. Why do you ride? Stick around to the end of the video, and you'll understand what I had to do a lot of research to figure out. So, hang on, we're going to have a good time today.
As the years kept piling on, Mark felt himself slipping. Not physically, he was still strong, but mentally, names took longer to recall. Focus came in short bursts. Work felt heavier, slower, duller. He blamed age, stress, life, until one day... he rediscovered something he left behind years ago. He swung a leg over a motorcycle for the first time in 17 years. The ride was short, just 20 minutes, but something strange happened. His mind felt clear, not distracted, not numb, sharp, alive. He slept better that night. He felt lighter the next morning. And within weeks, he said something he hadn't said in years.
I feel like myself again.
Introducing Motorcyclopene, a revolutionary wind-inducing therapy, clinically proven and widely celebrated. Motorcyclopene may help improve focus, mood, stress levels, and your tolerance for office meetings. In independent real-world testing, riders reported increased feelings of freedom, clarity, and spontaneous road trips. Side effects may include excessive smiling inside a helmet, uncontrollable urge to check weather apps, chronic garage lingering, and financial fluidity relating to aftermarket parts. Do not attempt a motorcyclopene without proper training, safety gear, and a healthy respect for gravity. Motorcyclopene is not for everyone. Individuals prone to chrome addiction, loud exhaust justification, and just one more ride syndrome should proceed with caution. Ask your cool biker friend if motorcyclopene is right for you.
What Mark didn't know was that scientists had already been studying exactly what he experienced. And what they found raises a wild question. Can riding a motorcycle actually reverse the effects of aging on the brain? Welcome along for another hangout, everyone. In our hangouts, we discuss stories from the saddle, motorcycling experiences, and biker-related topics.
Let's get to it.
If you're part of the 94% that are new to the channel, welcome. I would like to thank returning viewers, especially channel subscribers. Thanks for your support. It really helps. We all know that riding isn't passive. It's not like sitting in a car, insulated, distracted. Motorcycling demands constant threat assessment, balance and body positioning, micro adjustments in throttle and braking, and spatial awareness at speed. In neuroscience terms, that's full spectrum brain activation. And researchers have measured it. In one controlled experiment, scientists monitored riders using a wearable brain imaging system while they rode real motorcycles. They found increased activation in the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, the region responsible for decision-making, working memory, and executive function. In simple terms, riding forces your brain to work harder and smarter. One of the most cited researchers in this space is Ryuta Kawashima, the neuroscientist behind Nintendo's Brain Age cognitive training work. But his motorcycle research is lesser known and fascinating. In a controlled study, Kawashima and his team recruited adults who had motorcycle licenses but hadn't ridden in years. Participants were split into two groups. One resumed daily motorcycle riding, and the other continued normal transportation habits, you know, in their lame car. After just 2 months, riders showed measurable cognitive improvements, particularly in visual spatial processing. That's the brain function responsible for navigating environments, judging distance and motion, and spatial memory. Even more striking, in earlier reporting on the experiments, returning riders improved cognitive test scores significantly, including memory performance compared to non-riders. Kawashima's conclusion, motorcycling stimulates the brain through sustained alertness and complex motor control, conditions known to support cognitive vitality. He even suggests it may contribute to what he called smart aging. Another widely cited experiment conducted with researchers affiliated with University of California, Los Angeles, examined what happens to riders' brains in real time. Using EEG monitoring, scientists tracked neurological and hormonal changes during motorcycle rides. Findings included reduced cortisol or stress hormone levels, heightened focus, and a calm but alert mental state. Riders entered what researchers described as relaxed awareness state. Think of it as meditation at high speed. This combination of low stress and high focus is neurologically rare and incredibly beneficial. So, what is relaxed awareness? Relaxed awareness is a brain state where calmness and high alertness exist at the same time. It sounds contradictory, but neurologically, it's very real. In this state, stress hormones like cortisol drop, heart rate stabilizes, the mind becomes quiet, and focus becomes razor sharp. You're not overstimulated, but you're not disengaged either. You're present, fully tuned to the moment, without mental noise. What's the neuroscience behind it? Relaxed awareness typically involves three key brain mechanisms. First, prefrontal cortex engagement. This is your executive control center for decision-making, planning, and risk evaluation. Motorcycling heavily activates this region, as shown in studies like those led by Ryuta Kawashima. Second, reduced default mode network activity. The DMN is the brain system responsible for rumination, self-talk, worry, and mind wandering. When you enter relaxed awareness, DMN activity drops. That's why intrusive thoughts disappear mid-ride. Third, flow-adjacent brainwaves. EEG readings often show increases in alpha waves, leading to calm focus, and low beta waves, which is active attention. This is the same signature seen in meditation and elite performance states. So why does motorcycling trigger it so easily? Riding creates a perfect neurological formula. So there is an element on one side, or an input, and a brain effect that is received because of that element. The element of speed and risk produces the effect of heightened alertness. Balance and coordination engages the motor cortex. Environmental scanning activates visual processing. Wind and sensory inputs anchor present awareness. Repetition of control inputs induces rhythm. The brain is fully occupied, but not overwhelmed. The balance produces relaxed awareness naturally, without training. Motorcycling isn't the only gateway into this state, just one of the most efficient. There are other activities scientifically and experimentally linked to it. Martial arts sparring, rock climbing, skiing and snowboarding, scuba diving, long distance running, precision shooting and archery, musical performances, especially improvisation, and surfing, which combines balance, environmental reading, and timing. Surfers frequently describe a meditative clarity while riding waves. This leads to surfer brain. Surfer brain is an informal term used to describe the mental state surfers enter while riding waves. It's characterized by calm focus, present moment immersion, reduced internal dialogue, heightened sensory awareness, and emotional uplift. From the outside, it can look spaced out or dreamy. From the inside, it feels hyper clear. Surfers often describe it as thinking without thinking. Let's talk about sensory dominance. In both surfing and motorcycling, sensory input floods the brain. In surfing, there's the water texture, board feedback, wave shape, wind direction. On a motorcycle, you get the road surface, the lean angle, the engine vibration, wind pressure. The brain prioritizes real-time environmental processing over abstract thought. One major link between surfer brain and rider brain is managed danger. Both activities involve real consequences, rapid decision windows, and are environmentally unpredictable. Risk elevates adrenaline, but skill and repetition prevent panic. The result? High alertness without stress overload. It's a neurological balancing act. Surfer brain and rider brain are cousins. One shaped by waves and the other by asphalt, but both are forged in the same neurological fire, calm focus under pressure.
If you like this sort of thing and would like to support the channel, the best way to do that right now is to click the subscribe button.
Unfortunately, the benefits of flow state are not vested to new writers. Flow state does not come to writers in survival mode. To understand the conflict, you have to look at what each state requires neurologically. When a new rider throws a leg over a motorcycle, their brain treats the experience as a threat environment. This activates the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight response. Characteristics include elevated cortisol, increased heart rate, tunnel vision, hypervigilance, muscle tension, and overcorrection. Cognitively, the brain shifts resources toward threat detection, error avoidance, and immediate reaction. This is protective and necessary early on, but it's not flow. Flow requires almost the opposite conditions: high skill, high challenge, low fear, automatic motor control, and minimal self-talk. The brain must trust its own abilities enough to release conscious micromanagement. That trust doesn't exist yet in new riders. This is why new riders often report that even a short ride feels draining. That's because they're running multiple conscious processes simultaneously: clutch control, throttle modulation, gear selection, balance, lane positioning, and hazard scanning. Nothing is automatic. Every action requires executive function, heavy prefrontal cortex load. It's like trying to solve a math problem while sprinting. Flow can't emerge under that cognitive strain. You can visualize rider progression like this. In early stages, like the beginner, the skill level is low, the fear level is high, and the dominant brain state is survival mode. Among early intermediate riders, there's a moderate level of skill with a moderate fear level. They have controlled focus. Intermediate riders have higher skill, lower fear, and they can achieve relaxed awareness. In advanced riders, high skill, where fear is managed, they can achieve flow state. This is where flow state becomes accessible. Flow appears when skill replaces fear. Let's discuss microflow moments. Yes, they can happen. Even beginners can experience flashes of flow, usually on quiet roads, at moderate speeds, when executing a smooth turn, and when gear changes finally click. This moment feels like, oh, that feels right. They're short seconds, not minutes, but they're neurologically important. They signal that motor skills are beginning to automate. Here's what changes over time. In early riding, the prefrontal cortex is overloaded by continuous step-by-step control and high error monitoring. In skilled riding, basal ganglia take over motor sequencing. The cerebellum refines coordination and movements become procedural memory. This frees cognitive bandwidth for environmental immersion, tactical planning, and enjoyment. That's when relaxed awareness and eventually flow emerges. Fear blocks flow because flow requires psychological safety, not actual safety, perceived safety. If a rider thinks I might crash, I'm going too fast, or I don't trust this corner, the amygdala stays activated and keeps stress hormones elevated, which suppresses flow neurochemistry like dopamine and anandamida. Fear narrows cognition. Flow expands it. They can't fully coexist. Most riders begin accessing sustained flow when control inputs are automatic. Countersteering is intuitive. Braking is progressive, not abrupt. And hazard scanning becomes subconscious. At that point, the brain shifts from "don't die" to "optimize the experience." New riders often confuse adrenaline spikes with flow, but they're different. If a ride leaves someone shaky and drained, that was survival mode, not flow. When riders don't enter flow, they enter survival mode. Flow comes later, when the machine disappears beneath you and writing stops being something you do and becomes something you are. It's worth noting, survival mode isn't bad. It accelerates learning, heightens memory encoding, builds hazard awareness, and prevents complacency. It's the brain's way of building a safety foundation before granting access to flow. You earn flow through competence. Relaxed awareness and flow state are related, but not identical. In relaxed awareness, you are calm and alert. It's sustainable for long periods. There's low emotional intensity. It's meditative. Flow state is immersed and driven, often performance peaked, high engagement intensity, achievement oriented. Motorcycling often sits right between the two. Relaxed awareness is mentally restorative because it silences rumination, regulates stress hormones, enhances dopamine release, and improves attentional control. In modern life, dominated by screens and fragmented attention, this state is rare. Writing forces it. You can't multitask. You can't mentally drift. Your brain gets a break by being fully engaged. Long before brain scans, before neuroscience labs, before universities started measuring cognitive benefits, there was a writer asking a different question. Not what does writing do to the brain, but what does writing do to the soul? In 1974, philosopher and writer Robert M. Persing wrote a book that quietly changed how writers saw themselves, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. It's not really about motorcycles, and it wasn't really about Zen. It was about peace of mind. Persing introduced a concept he called quality, not luxury, not perfection, but the deep satisfaction that comes from total engagement with what you're doing, when your hands, your mind, and the machine are working as one system. He argued that modern life fractures us, work over here, thoughts over there, stress everywhere. But when you ride or even maintain your bike, that fragmentation disappears. You become whole again. Zen philosophy teaches presence, total awareness of the moment. No past, no future, just now. Sound familiar? When you ride, you feel the engine vibrations through your body. You read the road surfaces instinctively. You anticipate traffic before it moves. Your breathing syncs with speed and lean angle. You're not thinking about life. You're inside life. That state is meditation in motion. Not sitting still, but moving in perfect awareness. Persing believed motorcycles reveal something deeper. He wrote that when a machine breaks, riders don't feel inconvenience. They feel agitation. Why? Because the machine reflects the mind. If you approach it frustrated, you make mistakes. If you approach it calmly, solutions appear. The motorcycle becomes a mirror of your mental state. This is where healing happens. Not in escape, but in engagement. You're solving problems, using your hands, focusing your mind, achieving small wins, each one restoring confidence, competence, and control. Modern philosophy now echoes what Persing wrote 50 years ago. Meaningful mechanical engagement reduces anxiety. Hands-on focus lowers rumination. Purpose-driven tasks restore mental stability. Persing's ride across America wasn't about distance. It was about clarity. He discovered that long rides create philosophical space where unresolved thoughts surface and quietly resolve themselves. No therapy, no medication, just time, motion, and awareness. Today, neuroscience explains what Persing felt intuitively. Riding synchronizes cognitive systems. It balances stress hormones. It induces flow state. It sharpens awareness while calming emotional noise. What he called quality, science now call relaxed awareness. Different language, same human experience. So when writers say, writing heals me, they're not being poetic. They're describing something philosophers and now scientists have both tried to explain, healing through motion.
The following is a testimonial from the channel comments.
What I personally get from writing is profound. I've struggled with anxiety my whole life and been through some really rough and scary times with it. I've done all the standard things to try to deal with it: medication, therapy, meditation, support groups, etc. But there is only one thing that truly makes it dissolve away absolutely, and that's going for a ride. I'm not hamming it up or romanticizing it. That's genuinely how it is for me. As soon as I get on my bike, I'm king of the world. My worries melt away, and I just feel peace. So for me, it's the perfect activity. I'm out and about interacting with the world and people, but on my terms. I'm on my own, but I can pull in somewhere and meet some folks and have a chat if I feel like it, but then just head off again on my own whenever I want. It's the best self-therapy ever.
Relaxed awareness is where calm meets clarity, and few activities put you there as completely as life on two wheels. There's also a critical counterpoint. Motorcycling carries risks. Head injuries, even mild concussions, are linked to long-term cognitive impairment. Chronic stress from dangerous riding environments could also negate benefits. And unlike aerobic exercise, which has decades of brain health evidence, motorcycle research remains limited. In short, riding may stimulate the brain, but it's not a substitute for cardiovascular fitness, sleep, nutrition, and cognitive training. So why do riders report such profound mental shifts? Because motorcycling uniquely combines physical coordination, cognitive load, environmental immersion, and emotional reward. Few activities demand total presence the way riding does. You can't doom scroll on a bike at 70 miles an hour. You can't ruminate mid-corner. You're here, now, alive. Remember Mark from the commercial? He still rides, not every day, not to chase youth, but to maintain something he thought he'd lost: clarity, focus, vitality. Did riding reverse his brain's aging? Science says probably not. But did it reawaken dormant parts of his mind, strengthen cognitive function, improve his emotional well-being? The evidence and experience suggest yes. Sometimes staying young isn't about turning back time. It's about doing the things that make your brain feel alive. Every ride is therapy and brain training. If riding has ever cleared your mind, if the road has ever quieted your thoughts, if you've ever felt more like yourself with a helmet on than off, you're not alone. Now you know the science behind it. Next time somebody asks you why you ride, you can give a solid answer. There's philosophy and science behind it. And there's a whole community who understands exactly what you feel. So if this story resonated with you, drop a comment and let us know how you have been healed by two-wheel therapy. And share this with someone who needs a little more peace in their life. Because healing happens on a motorcycle. There's another side to this coin. When extreme conditions, close calls, or an accident can lead to traumatic stress, I'll reveal the raw, unscripted truth about the emotional and physical challenges of motorcycle riding. Join as I share my personal journey, revealing the compounding factors that led me to seriously consider giving up my passion. From grueling weather conditions and physical exhaustion to mental warfare of sustained concentration, I'll expose the lesser seen, less romantic side of life on two wheels. Learn about the bad stuff that can happen on motor trips, the unforeseen challenges of group rides, including communication breakdowns and equipment malfunctions, the profound mental and emotional impact of difficult experiences, transforming a source of therapy into a trigger for post-traumatic stress, what quitting truly means for a rider's identity and mental well-being. This isn't just a story of hardship. It's a testament to rehabilitation and recovery, showing how a rider can find their way back to the saddle after being broken by the very thing he loves. If you would like to learn more about the time I almost quit riding, stick around and hang out for a while by clicking this video. If you'd rather get out there on the road, this video is for you. I would really like to hear your ideas about hangout topics and enjoy your questions or comments. I'll see you out on the road, and we'll see you next time.